Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haugh, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome inside the clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I am David Haugh along with Bruce Levine, and we will be here until 11 o'clock this morning talking baseball. We are now within a week of the trade deadline everybody has been waiting for, and there's a lot of games to go over. There's a lot of drama to unfold and to watch and to analyze. But let's start with the fact that, you know, we get within a week of the trade deadline, Bruce, and the White Sox, they need a bullpen arm, they need a second baseman, but their priorities, I think, have been reestablished and confirmed, unfortunately, up in Milwaukee. The Cubs still very much open for business. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, David, and it's always fun to do this show every Saturday morning, 52 weeks out of the year. We're here for you between 9 and 11, talking Chicago baseball, talking national baseball. And David, you're right. It's fun to watch the Chicago White Sox play, although there are needs that have to be addressed here. The Cubs, on the other hand, 9 games behind Milwaukee, 9 games out of the second wild card spot. They have other priorities right now, and they need to be addressed as we move toward the deadline on the 30th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Chicago time. So a lot of work to be done by both teams here. And where would you like to begin today?
Well, we can start, obviously, up in Milwaukee. We build this as a World Series preview. Some of us talked about it all week, and we know that there's a lot of eyes focused on the White Sox and the Brewers. So that is kind of the focus of our attention, even though the Cubs, you know, they win yesterday 8-3. It felt very nostalgic for a moment. You had, you know, the ovation, the first inning, Bryant, Baez, and Rizzo all crossing home plate when Javi Baez is homer. So there's a lot to talk about with the Cubs, Robinson, Chirinos. But, Bruce, I think the center of the baseball world was Milwaukee at American Family Field last night with the White Sox and the Brewers. Thought it was going to be a pitcher's duel. It was for 7 innings. The Brewers end up on top 7-1. Emotions boiled over. It ended up being quite the spectacle. Tony La Russa, his first ejection since coming back to the dugout. Tim Anderson, an inning later, we have yet to hear from him. But I guess that's a good place to start, because we still don't know a lot about what got Tim Anderson upset, but we do know more about what was, you know, what was causing Tony La Russa to respond the way that he did.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. A home plate umpire having difficulty with the strike zone, according to the White Sox. La Russa sees a few walks that change the course, as you pointed out, David, to a very close game in the seventh inning, turning into a blowout. And the fact that pitches weren't made, pitches weren't called, according to the White Sox, and depending on whether you're watching it or not, you agree with that those were high strikes not called, or they were balls. The reality was is that La Russa eventually comes out and doesn't address the home plate umpire, but starts talking to another umpire, and then finally gets into it with a home plate umpire and gets thrown out. So from that perspective, David, take it away.
Well, you had Bummer and Burb walk two batters apiece, and then the grand slam. So there's understandable frustration there. But Bruce, I mean, Tony La Russa doesn't do this often, and he addressed later, and we'll get into what happened post game. But when you were watching, what he referred to, Urias was kind of crouching. He's talking about, yeah, he has a reputation where he was taking
ducking.
These,
La Russa calls
the ducking and yeah, the games. I don't know if that was something you have heard before about him. Is this something that is well known about him?
You know, look, umpire is supposed to have the strike zone, not be looking at a hitter moving around. But if he moves his body to a lower point, does that reflect some reaction from an umpire who eventually is looking at a lower strike zone than the reality is? Whatever it is, David, Aaron Bummer didn't have good command. He had electric stuff, but he didn't have good command. And you have to start with that, okay? The stuff moves so much. He wasn't getting a lot of called strikes, but the movement of the ball and the fact that it wasn't consistent early on really creates a different mindset for the umpire, don't you think?
I do think that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we agree on that, you know, an umpire is a human being. He's back there, and he's seeing this guy missing the strike zone, and the stuff is so electric that you have to stay on top of it because his slider moves as much as anybody's in baseball. That said, it appeared, if you believe in the box that you're watching on the television, and, you know, Jason Benetti and Steve Stone are also watching that box and guiding you, if you believe that that's actually the strike zone and whether they're missing it or not, or whether or not, you know, you're looking from an angle and you're not looking over the top of a pitcher, and that some of these angles impact exactly what Steve and Jason see and what you and I see when we're watching the game on TV. That said, some high strikes appeared to be missed. So let's roll into Tony La Russa talking about getting thrown out of his first game as a White Sox player, as you said, as a White Sox manager, David, as you said. And then eventually Tim Anderson getting irate, being thrown out, and having to be restrained. Let's hear from Tony.
Tony, I have two questions. The first one is, he hadn't been thrown out of a game in 10 years, but it's obvious that the umpires do a great job all the time, but when calls that are missed impact you, did you feel like you had to react?
Is that one question? I'll give you two answers to the one question.
All right.
Number one, if we make it a definite policy that we play against the other team, we do not play against the umpires. They're a very difficult job. And one thing that happens sometimes, you get your team to play with emotion. That's how you succeed and compete. And in a situation like that, we got emotional. But if you look, play 9 innings or 8.5 innings, a couple of those calls, you know, did not decide it, but it was important at the time. And I was upset because I thought the hitter ducked the pitches. They were just trying to drive in and run. That's what I thought from my point. I think he's a good hitter, an RBI guy, but he ducked and got away with it. And that's why I was upset. But umpires did decide that game.
And the second question is, how did Tim get involved?
I don't know. I was excused from the premises. I think he's upset too. I mean, we were upset. It was a game where Gio kept us close. It won nothing in the seventh inning. I mean, that game is there. And we thought we had the third out. And then we have, you know, six outs to get back in the game. So our team was upset, but I mean, I'm saying it again. We get upset ourselves, and we try to take the upset out on the other team. There is no way that it's beneficial to try to get upset at umpires. All it does is distract you.
That was Tony La Russa Friday night after getting ejected, his first one as the White Sox manager this time around. And Tim Anderson followed an inning later. And Bruce, a couple things stand out to me. Number one is the entire frustration that was shown at the White Sox bullpen last night in turning a close game into a blowout underscores to me and to everyone, especially hopefully Rick Hahn, how badly they need a bullpen arm, how badly they need some help down there, because their relievers are not living up to expectation. Number two, I think it just reminds you that, you know, Tony was, he did say they care. It shows you care. And they are viewing this series, whether we want to, you know, have some fun and refer to it as a World Series preview or not, they're taking it seriously, despite the fact that even after losing, they have a 9-game lead in the division. They're not taking the foot off the gas, and they're intense each and every night. The third thing is, I do wonder what Tim Anderson had to say. We did not hear from him yesterday, but I do give you some credit for pushing Tony La Russa again postgame to the point where I don't think he appreciated your first question, but he was a little frustrated.
That's okay. I mean, our job is to ask the questions that we feel serve, you know, best story and the fans who want to know what happened and why it happened. But, you know, to your second point, David, it's you know, totally 100% on the mark. And that is, you point out that this is a team that has arguably the most comfortable lead in baseball. They do, standings-wise. And yet they go out there and they play like they're a game behind with a game to go before the end of the season every night. And that is a credit to Tony La Russa, the coaching staff. Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams are putting this team together. And most importantly, those players who just go out there and bust their butt every day and don't take anything for granted. So if you're a White Sox fan, you have to be excited about the results and where they're at right now, but more excited about the fact that this is a relentless team that takes nothing for granted and doesn't take losing a game like that easy. I think it was it's something that people strive for in baseball, to have a team that's both really good and really emotionally into every game. And I think the White Sox have that. And to their credit, everybody involved, that's why we are talking about this today, because that's the emotion they show. That's how much they care about a game. And La Russa protecting his team beyond this game that's already over with by pointing out that it's not the umpires that lost the game, but it's his team that lost the game, revolves back to your other point, David, which is, they need bullpen help before the trading deadline ends.
312-644-6767. How did you feel after watching the White Sox lose 7-1, turning a close game into a blowout last night? What do you expect today and tomorrow in the great matchup, pitching matchups that will take place in Milwaukee? Bruce, I would just remind White Sox fans as well, as badly as you might have felt last night after that loss, take yourself back a week ago, this morning, as we were sitting here doing Inside the Clubhouse last week after the White Sox lost their opener coming back, and there was the sense that they couldn't, you know, oh boy, you can't beat a good team, and all of those kind of narratives started to surface again. And then what happened over the weekend, they give up one run in two games, and so that's worth remembering as well. I still am wondering, because as I watched and as Jason Benetti and Steve Stone reminded us, Tim Anderson doesn't typically respond the way that he responded. It was as if he heard something that you just don't typically hear in the course of a baseball argument. His response, Bruce, was something I felt like the White Sox were coming very close to letting him kind of veer toward that suspension territory. Get him in the clubhouse, I kept saying to myself. Get him away from the umpires. Don't let him say something he's going to regret and everybody's going to regret later.
Yeah, to have him have to be physically restrained by your own coaches and teammates, you have to believe that Tim Anderson heard something back at them that set him off. And it wasn't just the strikes that weren't called, allegedly, by the home plate umpire. It was more, you know, I don't like what I'm hearing here. Somebody's being disrespected. That's how you have to kind of view what's going on here. As you said, Tim Anderson plays with a lot of fire, a lot of heart, but he doesn't play out of control, getting himself in trouble with umpires and other players on a daily basis. That's just a natural part of Tim Anderson and how he plays. So to see him thrown out was kind of shocking. Hopefully we get some answers today before the White Sox play the Brewers again. But it's a tremendously interesting series because you have six of the best pitchers in baseball. Five of them were actually at the All-Star game this 10 days ago. That is amazing. And Lucas Giolito, who's the odd man out there, was your All-Star in 2019, the last time they played an All-Star game. So this is a sensational weekend series and one to watch. And predictably, it was a pitcher's battle before things got away.
Yeah, it was. And Rodon goes against Burns later today, tonight in Milwaukee. So that gives you a sense of the matchup today, which will be fun. And last night, Lucas Giolito felt like he probably deserved better. He gives up one earned run in six innings. His record falls to 8-7. Bruce, what did you think when the Brewers tried to take advantage of an opportunity offensively and pinch hit for Peralta? Craig Counsell playing that National League Baseball. And so Peralta only goes four innings because of that, and it wasn't something that they took advantage of, but it showed you the kind of – that was a playoff move, wasn't it? I know Craig Counsell pushes right, but that kind of – it felt like an October type of strategy being implemented there.
Yeah, a couple things in there, I'm glad you brought that up. One is watching Peralta's pitch count because he's – way beyond anywhere else he's been innings-wise in his career, okay? And also, the fact that the Brewers have such outstanding bullpen and outstanding pitching that adding a run or two, they feel like that's adding like a crooked number, okay? So that's how Counsell manages, and I think that's why he is one of the top two or three managers in all of baseball. He knows his team well, he uses them well, and they usually have better results than people expect. This is a team that's made the playoffs 3 years in a row, and a lot of the credit goes to Craig Counsell and the way he handles that group. But it was National League Baseball. It hurt the White Sox. I later asked the question of La Russa toward the end, how National League Baseball hurt him and how the DH obviously should be one way or the other. It should be all over the place because he had the bases loaded with Giolito up and could have pinch hit for him.
Yeah.
Or more importantly, he wasn't going to pinch hit for him there. But if the DH is in that situation, you have arguably a very different ball game. You know,
it's
a very
different
ball game.
It was too early to pinch hit for Giolito, but your point is well taken in that, you know, you wonder if teams that are used to functioning in the way that the Brewers are have an advantage in situations like last night. And that may sound like an excuse because the Sox lost, but I think there should be one set of rules for everybody, one set of rules for both leagues, but that's a different conversation. We're having one about the White Sox, who lost the first game of a pivotal series. Is it pivotal? That's probably overstating it. Just a very interesting series up in Milwaukee. It's time now to go to the Score listener line. Powered by BetQL, bet smarter, beat the books. Download BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. That is where we find our buddy Ron on the South Side. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, boys. Couple of things. David, you mentioned last week against Houston. Now, here's the difference. I did feel that the Sox probably would win that series because the Sox play better at home. Now, to contrast that with the series against Milwaukee, I really have concerns, but and mainly, yes, Houston has good pitching, but when I looked at that Milwaukee Brewers pitching, I just thought this was going to be more difficult than the series against Houston. You know, guys, it's just so interesting that when we came into the season, most people predicted that the White Sox strength is going to be their bullpen, and it certainly hasn't been. So, the obvious things that you all mentioned, they need a bullpen guy. I still think they need a second baseman. There's still a lot of times where the White Sox are leaving men on base and they're not, you know, picking up some of these runners. So those are my comments, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Ron. Bruce, the Sox are 4-4 since the break. Any reason for concern? Obviously, there's a lot that's in the – each game is different and each reason is specific. But is this a team that you are starting to get some concerns about?
I don't have major concerns about it right now, but I do for the long run, and I think that's what Hahn and Williams are looking at this week is when it gets a little tough in September, the winds start blowing the other way, can this team manufacture runs? And can you do you need a guy like Frazier from Pittsburgh to bat at the top of the order to make sure that you have a guy that gets on base an awful lot to make sure that you can score runs in a different way? I think that's important. I believe the White Sox feel offensively they're going to be okay because of the fact that Eloy is coming and hopefully that Robert's not far behind him. I don't count on things like that, okay? These are injured players. It's going to take them some time to get back. I believe that if they address the second base situation and they address a bullpen piece or two, I think this is a World Series team from here on out. I'm not concerned about them winning the division. I think that's pretty much already won. But
it's in hand. You got to think. It's a 9-game lead hand. Over.
But yeah. But the perspective of being a World Series caliber team, you know, and getting by the Houstons and getting by the Tampas and getting by the Bostons, the other really good teams in the league in the playoffs, that's the major concern, I think, right now.
And it is, and I understand the concerns. I would just caution White Sox fans to remember, and I think they can respond to this weekend however they wish. But I do factor in the next time they see the Brewers in a game like this or a series like this, if it is indeed the World Series, Eloy will be back in theory. Luis Robert will be back in theory. They aren't going at this Brewers team in the series with a full strength, with a full lineup of hitters, and that will make a difference potentially. And you mentioned Eloy. Let's find out how he's doing. He is at Charlotte. We will talk to the Charlotte Knights hitting coach Chris Johnson when we come back on Inside the Clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Through an Instagram post as he pulls that one deep to the gap in left center field. See you later. That is blasted by Yermin Mercedes. He's back.
Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. This is David Hall with Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock this morning talking baseball. That was from the Charlotte Knights Friday night game. Yermin Mercedes unretires, comes back, hits a home run in his first at bat. We will get to some of those details and implications in a moment. Please now to go out to the Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book. That is where we find Charlotte Knights hitting coach Chris Johnson. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? I'm doing great.
Doing great here, and obviously we heard about the Yerminator home ring. We want to get to some of that in a moment. I'm more interested in the progress of Eloy Jimenez, who was also in the lineup last night. Now you've had 34 at-bats or so to see where Eloy is on his recovery. How would you describe his progress and how far away he is from returning to Chicago?
If you ask me, I think he's ready. I think he's ready to go. He's starting to have good at-bats. He's starting to see pitches, and now his swing is on time. With both the fastball and the breaking ball, you know, with a guy of his talent, all he has to do is get his timing down and his swing's going to be there. He looks phenomenal. So I, if you ask me, I don't make these decisions, but if you ask me, I think he's ready to go.
Chris, first of all, thanks for joining us today. And as somebody that watched your big league career and knew what a good hitter you were, you know, helping guys hit like Yermin, like Jake Lamb that's there rehabbing, like Eloy, when they're already big league hitters, do you take a different approach to dealing with them when they're there than you do with some of the players that are up and coming right now?
Yeah, a little bit. At this level, most of the time what we're focusing on is approach, how to work an at-bat, how to game plan for pitchers. With guys like that, they kind of already know what they want to do. So I give them the information. We talk about, you know, what the certain pitcher has. And then those guys that have been to the big leagues are usually able to, you know, make their own game plan and go into the game with that. So those guys make it a little bit easier. Some of the guys that I have here need a little bit more talking to and a little bit more strategy going into it, decide well, you know, what they want to do, what works best with their swing. But as far as guys like Yermin, Eloy, Jake, those guys are pretty good and already know their routine and already know what they want to do at the plate.
So, Chris, Eloy goes down and ends up on the injured list with a pectoral injury. And you wonder about some of the things with his swing mechanics perhaps coming back, maybe a loss of power coming back. Or is this one of those things that when he does end up back in Chicago, sooner rather than later, Sox fans hope, will we see anything different about the way he approaches things at the plate or in his swing or power capability?
Not a thing. I was wondering the same thing when I – you know, when we heard that he was coming here, I was wondering what his swing was going to look like. Is he going to make any physical changes because of that pec? And he has made none. You know, yesterday we were in the cage and I was, you know, we were working on some high fastball stuff off the fastball velocity machine. And he was just hitting line drive after line drive, gap to gap. In VP, he's hitting the ball out of the ballpark and his swing looks the exact same. So I think he's done a tremendous job of his rehab and he looks great.
Chris Johnson, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse. He's David and Bruce. We're here for you 52 weeks out of the year talking baseball on The Score every Saturday between 9 and 11. Chris, I don't know from the time you retired in 2016 until you became a coach if you had time to get a master's degree in psychology, but that would probably be helpful preparing some of these guys. And I guess in particular, dealing with guys who, like Yermin, who right now is trying to stay confident, stay within himself, be patient, and try to get back to the major leagues and still be productive at AAA, knowing what great highs and great lows that he's had this season. I wonder what part of your dealing with him is the psychiatric part of dealing with a player.
Yeah, it's a lot of it. I think the fact that I was able to play the game so long, I was able to come up through the minor leagues, play in the big leagues, and then towards the end of my career, go back down to AAA and try to work my way back to the big leagues. I think it prepared me well for these situations. I think especially at this level, this stuff happens a lot. You know, it guys kind of get frustrated. You get to the big leagues and then you want to get back to the big leagues, or you're so close and you really want to get to the big leagues. And sometimes, you know, frustration sets in a little bit because, you know, we've been working our whole life, to get to that level. And this is our dream to play there. And then when, in Yerm's case, you get a little taste of it and you have some success and, you know, sometimes it can get frustrating. And, you know, some people deal with frustrations differently. And some people, you know, they're able to keep it inside. Some people wear their heart in their sleeves like I did when I was a player. So that's really all that's about. It's just, you know, a guy that really, really wants to get to the big leagues and prove that what he did there was not a fluke. And you know what, sometimes, you know, those frustrations boil over. But, you know, we got Big Yerm back yesterday and he hit a bullet off the wall. He hit a home run. So I think that's just what that's about.
Chris, I think that's well put. And we tend to forget sometimes, you know, you during your career, if you were frustrated, you didn't always have maybe the social media outlet that a lot of these young players do today or a lot of the players exercise today. And what happened with Yermin Mercedes was, I think, exacerbated by the fact that it was shared on social media. So we didn't get much of a glimpse other than that. You were right in the middle of it. I just wonder if you could characterize, you mentioned the frustration, and now we saw, you know, Yermin Mercedes come back last night in homer, and looks like he's back on track in terms of being committed and focused. How would you characterize the conversations? How would you characterize, you know, his mood change in the 24 hours that we kind of here in Chicago were wondering what was going to happen next?
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's quick. You know, the day before it happened, Yerm was, you know, playing games, taking BP, happy-go-lucky. Everybody, you see what Yerm's like, and that's how he is in the clubhouse and everything. And then, you know, the next day he came in and he, you know, you could see there was some frustration and he ended up having a rough game that game and things just kind of boiled over. You know, and then I think, like you said, with social media, it's easy to hop on there and you know, say things and things that you probably shouldn't and things you probably wish you could take back. And, you know, we've all done that, and And that's just part of you being a young player, in my opinion, is, you know, you go through these ups and downs, but you get through it. And we talked to him and said that, you know, we're behind him, and we made sure that there's nothing going on, you know, outside of the game that may be frustrating, because we understand that those things happen. You know, we found out that it's just frustration, him wanting to get to the big leagues and him wanting to, you know, show the world what he can do again. So we got everybody back on track, Yerm's back on track, and then, you know, we're all set to go.
Chris Johnson of the Charlotte Knight coaching staff, the hitting coach for the Knights, joining us for a few more minutes on Inside the Clubhouse. Chris, this would be probably a good time for you and Wes Helms and the other coaches to ask for a raise, the way that some of your players have been coming through the system and contributing right away to the White Sox. The way Berger has come up, the way that Sheets has come up. What are you feeding those guys there? I know the spreads are pretty good, especially with Eloy there, but obviously you guys are getting some things done and preparing these guys pretty nicely.
I'll tell you what, the spreads with Eloy here are fantastic. He's doing a great job of that, I will say that. But I'll tell you what, just seeing these guys succeed up there has been unbelievable. It feels like I'm getting my first hits in the big leagues again. You know, every time we have a game, and when Sheets and Berger were first sent up, we would run into Pockets' office as our clubhouse manager in Charlotte and watch those at bats and just be cheering. So it's just so great. Those guys, they have the ability. And like I said earlier, that all we're doing is focusing on those guys' game plan, their approach, what works best for them, how to set up certain pitchers, how to sit on pitches, how to read what pitchers are doing from at bat to at bat. And once those guys figured that part of it out, their ability just took them the rest of the way. So that's all really I'm doing is getting them ready to have those big league at bats. And their success is all on them.
So, Chris, let's talk about Gavin Sheets for a second. So the other night here in Chicago on television, Ozzie Guillen, during a pregame show on NBC Sports Chicago, broke down Gavin Sheets' swing. And side by side, they put an image and video of Gavin Sheets hitting a walk-off home run and the way that he shifted his weight and the way that he's placed his hands and his swing, and they compared it. And it didn't seem like much of a reach when they were comparing it on video in slow motion to Jim Thome. And Jim Thome, who is a Hall of Famer, it's not fair to compare or make that comp to a young player like that. But when you look at Gavin Sheets' swing, what do you see? What do you remember about why it would translate well at the major league level? Because it seems as if he's a better major league hitter than he was a minor league hitter for whatever reason.
Right. I think that's probably because when you get into the major leagues, the pitchers are more around the zone, and Gavin is really good at having a good at bat. You know, everybody likes to talk about his power, and rightly so, because he's been able to hit some balls out of the ballpark. However, he's a good hitter first. So those are the guys that are really going to have success and really going to do some great things in the big leagues are the guys who are able to have a good at bat and be a good hitter and then let their power just show up. And that's the kind of guy that Gavin is. He's able to go to all fields. He's great with two strikes. You can't beat him with the fastball up in the zone, as we've seen. And you know, that's why he's having that success. So he gets a tremendous weight shift. He gets a great separation, and he doesn't try to do too much. And so I think that's probably the main reasons why he's having so much success.
Chris, David and I really appreciate you joining us. Keep up the great work there. It's interesting. You and Wes are probably asked for more interviews now sometimes than you were as players because of how important your jobs are and what a great job you're doing. So thanks for joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Absolutely, anytime. I appreciate you guys having me.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Johnson, the hitting coach for the Charlotte Knights, Bruce. And you're exactly right. Boy, does he play a big role in the development of some of these young Sox hitters who come to the majors and do not look overwhelmed. They look well prepared, and they are making an impact. From Jake Berger to Gavin Sheets, you can go down the list. Andrew Vaughn didn't have experience at the AAA level, but you look at the way that he has now become. He had three of the Sox 5 hits last night, and he is on his way to a really impressive rookie season. Young hitters continue to come through when the Sox need them, and boy, have they needed them.
Absolutely, David. And when you talk about Vaughn, going back to remember on one of the Zooms in March, I asked Tony La Russa after we had Jim Thome as a guest, you know, what he expects from Vaughn. And he said, well, he reminds me of one of the great hitters that I've had in the past, but I won't put that pressure on him. Well, when he said that, he already did, you know. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, probably alluding to Pujols is something that he was talking about. And it's a reach right now comparing Vaughn to Pujols, but you're seeing these at-bats and the way he uses a whole field with power. It's fun to watch this guy develop because they appear not to be wrong in the fact that this guy might be a special hitter down the line.
And it will be even more fun to watch him in the same batting order and lineup with Eloy Jimenez. And as Chris Johnson told us, I think the quote was, Bruce, if you ask me, he's ready to go. So the Charlotte hitting coach says Eloy is ready, maybe sooner rather than later. Boy, can any flights from Charlotte to Milwaukee? Could he get there for today or tonight and maybe this weekend? I doubt it. That's wishful thinking. But Eloy seems ready to come back and contribute to a White Sox team that has another big game tonight in Milwaukee. But you know what? When we come back, Bruce, we're going to shift gears. We're going to talk a little Cubs because it was an interesting day at Wrigley Field, especially for 37-year-old backup catchers who had a big day at Clark and Addison. So Inside the Clubhouse coming up next with Bruce Levine. I'm David Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Drino swings and hits one in the air to deep left field. Look up. This is gone. Number two on the afternoon for Robinson Chirinos. Cubs extend the lead 8-2 over Arizona here in the sixth.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score with Bruce Levine. I'm David Haw. That was the voice of Zach Zabeman calling the second Robinson Chirinos home run on Friday at Wrigley Field, Bruce. And the heart says that was the story of the day. Love a good comeback story. Love that a 37-year-old backup catcher has a moment like that. Saw him early this week talk to Taylor McGregor on Marquee Sports Network. Great interview, great background. The heart says that is what you remember about Friday. But the head says, you know what, the most significant thing about yesterday, sure, the Cubs won 8-3 against the 4A Diamondbacks, but Zach Davies put himself in conversation for trade possibilities with a pretty strong outing, striking out a season-high 8 in 5 1/3. Zach Davies now puts his name on that list of scouts who were in the press box and watching and thinking, okay, what about Zach?
Yeah, you're right about that, and Davies would be a nice complimentary piece. As we talked about on your show, you know, the Mully and Haw show yesterday, when you were on with Mark Grody, you know, bundling is something that a lot of teams and the Cubs would probably best benefit themselves right now. When you talk about a guy like Davies maybe joining, you know, somebody else like a Bryant or a Rizzo in a trade for a good and important group of young players from somebody else. That's the key right now. So, you know, we concentrate on where they're going and what teams are interested. But what Hoyer and company are interested in is getting the most value back for what they have if they're going to trade them. You know, they don't have to trade them. They would probably at this point be interested in trading them if they can get back controllable pieces that they can project for the future, not to just move them and have some guys that maybe will show up in 3 or 4 or 5 years. This is more about getting something that can be impactful in 2021, 2022, 2023, maybe 2021, depending on how close they are to the big leagues. But this is not salary dump. This is not player dump. This is about improving the future for the Chicago Cubs. So when you talk about Davies, you talk about you know, Rizzo, you talk about Bryant, Kimbrel, Baez. These are conversations that have tremendous depth in them. It's not about moving them just anywhere. And yesterday, seeing all the scouts there, and there were quite a few at Wrigley watching both the Cubs and the Arizona Diamondbacks, because the Diamondbacks have players that other people want, especially Escobar. The White Sox were certainly in on that at one point.
Could he just stay in Chicago, Bruce? It's kind of
Yeah, he could.
Yeah, hope he packed for a long trip, a long stay. But anyway, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. He might work out. But the Yankees' interest in Anthony Rizzo might be something that has gone under the radar, and now they are trying to decide whether or not they are a contender right now. You know, being I think they're 9 games behind Boston in the standings, but a little closer to the second wild card. Will they make a move for what they desperately need, and they've needed all year, is left-handed hitting? And left-handed hitting at Yankee Stadium with that short porch and Anthony Rizzo might be a short-term answer to what they need to be competitive and be a playoff team in 2021.
Maybe. The Red Sox might also be interested in Anthony Rizzo because they have the worst production in baseball at the first base spot. Maybe. But, Bruce, I think this bears further discussion. You mentioned Anthony Rizzo, and certainly people understand the realities contractually that the Cubs are facing. His last 30 games, he's been bad. I mean, he's hitting 194 over his last 30 games. He's got 4 homers in that span, but he's not like he has been a dangerous hitter when he, you know, has had an opportunity to look like a guy that teams would want to trade for. You know what you're getting with Anthony Rizzo, I suppose, because of his experience. I'd worry about his back, and I'd worry about this last month or so where he has not been as dangerous of a hitter as he has been throughout his career.
Yeah, so here's what the scouts ask. They already know what we know, and we see the trends and everything else. So here's what they want to know, and part of that you just mentioned. They want to know, is he healthy? Okay, that's number one. One of the scouts yesterday asked me about Rizzo and said, what's with this back thing? And I said, well, it's a chronic back issue that he's had his entire career, going back to even when he was a young player before he got to the Chicago Cubs, and it's not kept him off the field a significant amount of time. But at age 32, you know, he'll be 32 in a couple weeks, people look at it in a different way. So especially when they're trading for something like that. So the scout also asked me, how does he handle downtimes? And I said, what I've seen over the years, he handles them as well as anybody. His makeup is good. You see him jumping up and down and cheering his teammates, even when he's doing poorly. So these are some of the things that they want to know. Is he physically healthy? Is he going to fit in with that other team that he's traded to? Will he be able to handle moving on to a new place after being here for 10 years? These are things that go along with the fact that what we all know, and that is he hasn't hit well over the last 30 games, and that his OPS since the beginning of 2020 is about 750, where he's a career, you know, 820, 830, 840 OPS guy. So those are certainly main concerns, but I think Anthony Rizzo would help another team a lot just by his presence and his defense, which is still the best in baseball at first
base. I don't know that you talked me into that, Bruce, but I do think you've talked me into wanting to play our favorite game. I hear the Clash in my head is singing, should I stay or should I go? And we will play that when we come back on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.